rooms, everything around me. Green gets the money, dollar dollar bill, yo.
What is going on, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, sponsored by Prediction Strike. We are recording on Tuesday evening, April the 11th, and I am your host, Vlad Sedler. You can find me on Twitter, at RotoGut. And with me, as always, is my always on fleek co-host, Mr. Matty Wood himself, at Matty Wood on Twitter, Matthew Davis. What's going on, brother?
Apologies for being tardy last week as I fleed town to go to Milwaukee to see Max Scherzer pitched. Although the results weren't there, I had a blast. I think I pulled the same shenanigans one time last year when Dylan Cease was on the bump against Shane Bieber. So at least it's for anticipated elite pitching. And yes, it's good to be back. Baseball's in full swing. We're in week three. If you're doing the NFBC type of thing, looking at it as a week-to-week picture, sort of like football. There's 27 weeks this year, and so we're in the full swing of things now. We've got injuries piling up. The weather is absolutely gorgeous in Chicago right now. It was in the low 70s today with a little bit of wind. Kind of felt like you were on the lake or, you know, getting a coastal breeze. So life is good. The air in Chicago smells like there's just meats being cooked all around you. I have third row seats behind the Dodgers dugout next week when they come to visit the Cubs for four games on Thursday. So, yeah, life is good. I'm drinking a zombie dust beer right now from Three Floyds, and cheers. It's everything's great. Yeah. I'm watching Jacob DeGrom chop up the Royals right now. I mean, what, Ohtani's pitching tonight. Cole got a win after coming off a slow start with two earned runs in the first inning, and he combats it to only allow those two earned runs. So, yeah, life's great outside of Christian Javier allowing way too many stolen bases.
Dude, this is it's great, right? I mean, we still have more than 5 months of this action. Like, I just cannot stop. I'm incessantly either scrolling box scores or going through MLB TV and just, man, just absorbing it all. It's just such a really amazing, amazing time. And, you know, I think your Cubbies are getting mashed a little bit right now. Just Mariners came out of the gate, gave Wisniewski a little bit of a little bad taste in his mouth. And yeah, man, just so much action. Kyle Wright today, he came in probably against my better judgment. I went ahead and started him where I had him, and he got beat up a little bit. 75 pitches over three innings and four runs. A couple of swipes for Mr. Jake Fraley. I think this was a case where maybe in some 12-teamers, people may have sat him, even though he had a four-game half week. Just, you know, the matchups against Atlanta, I'm sure people have other good options there, so a bit of a tough call, but it's happening, man. It's a beautiful time right now.
Speaking of stolen bases, they're up league wide, right? We're seeing it. We're seeing the success rate increase, except for the Minnesota Twins per usual. Last year, they were last in the league. And I think you and I talked about it. We highlighted that, and lo and behold, again, the Minnesota Twins only have one stolen base. So some things don't change for some organizations, but we are seeing an increase in stolen bases, which has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, right now, just looking at the league leaders, it's the Cleveland Guardians way above the pack. I think they're at about 20 right now. And yeah, just looking there at the bottom, you mentioned the Twins just have a single stolen base. The Rockies have two, and then the Reds had two until Jake Fraley's two bags. So Dodgers and Red Sox aren't running very much either. Both of the Dodgers' stolen bases coming from, guess who? James Outman.
Yeah. My jaw is open because Adelis Garcia is just not helping DeGrom out in the outfield tonight. But so stolen bases are up. That's fun. The pitch clock, I don't think it's been causing too many problems, right? We haven't seen too many issues with that. So I think some people were hesitant on changes. But all in all, like I mentioned, a draft cheat last week on Mondays with Matty Wood. It's been just enjoy your popcorn, right? It's just been awesome.
Absolutely. So today we'll go over some playing time news, some injuries, a lot of things popping up that, as they are every single day. Really hard not to be on tilt a lot of times, right? Because things like you spent a second round pick or third round pick on Brandon Woodruff, and then he hits the IL. Tim Anderson's now for 2 to 4 weeks. So many brutal things going on, but it's just the nature of the game. Those have played fantasy for a long time are kind of used to it. And then things like in the Adam Duvall injury, I mean, that really stings. It obviously takes a big bite out of the Red Sox there, but he was hitting like 450, leading the league in runs batted in. He was absolutely beasting, the top guy in cut line points, I believe. Maybe Brian Reynolds had more points, but just that's a big blow. And for those that, by the time people listen to this episode, the cut line first fab period will already have ended, but some tough decisions to make there. I don't think Duvall's a very tough decision. I mean, you know, fractured wrist, out for quite a while. I think he's probably one of the easier drops there. So obviously somebody like Tim Anderson, you're not going to drop him just because he's out for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, O'Neill Cruz as well. He's going to be a cut. And then before we started recording, I asked you about Alex Kirilloff, who's in our news and notes, but we can kind of just blend him in right now. He started his rehab assignment today. Somebody that's on, you know, fringe, but potentially coming back soon, and you do have a timetable, I'm much more willing to hold on to somebody like that in the cut line versus somebody that is not. You know, we don't have a timetable for them, or the time to return is just simply too long. You got to cut these guys. You can't have too much just dead weight in this type of format with just the points and the best ball. And so Kirilloff, going to hold him. You and I agreed on that. I was asking you about him. And then the other ones, right? O'Neill Cruz and Adam Duvall, those kind of plays, unfortunately, going to have to let them go.
Yeah. That's it's a shame. And with, I mean, Kirilloff especially, he's one of those players that I just happen to like. I have a little bit of a proclivity. I don't know if that's the word, but just I like him. And so I'm kind of I allow emotional fantasy decisions in his regard. And if you had no affinity for that's the word I was looking for Alex Kirilloff, you'd be like, okay, so this is a guy that it literally goes into every season with wrist issues, and which is obviously very important for hitting. And, you know, had the surgery last year and seemed to be recovering fine. And all of a sudden, it's not that good. And he goes back on the IL, and they're obviously being very cautious with him, as they are with a lot of their players. So just separating liking Kirilloff, you just think about it, and it is kind of dangerous, right? Like, you're doing it because you hope that things work out for him some year, but this just may not be the year. What I do know is that they could really use his bat in that lineup. They're struggling, of course. Buxton, I think, just hit. I don't know if he had hit a home run prior to Tuesday night, but he hit a home run there, I think, off of Lance Lynn. And, Carlos Correa is dealing with some back issues. Joey Gallo just hit the IL. Max Kepler's on the IL. So, I mean, yeah, let's start there with some injuries and news notes. The Minnesota Twins. Hopefully Alex Kirilloff is back. Jorge Polanco should be back soon. But the big news of the day is Edward Julian he was pulled from his game in AAA, corresponding with the Gallo IL news, and looks like he will be joining the team tomorrow. And he's a very interesting prospect. Our guys, Eric Cross and Jay Kuchek, like Julian a lot, as far as I know. We know Rob Silver and Phil Dussault and our other Canadian compadres are also big fans of his. And he's a guy who traditionally has had exceptional plate discipline. So obviously that's a good sign or a good case for a rookie that's coming up in terms of them being able to stick around. This season, his plate discipline hasn't been all that great. He's striking out at a 33% clip against only 8 games, but a 20% walk rate. So the walks are insane. He's got speed. He's fast. He's got a little bit of power. I think he will be a welcomed addition. And then, of course, based on what he does this week, he could end up being a very popular free agent ad on Sunday, because middle infield is really weak. And obviously people have lost Anderson and some other people. So it's going to be a nice little addition there.
Fangraphs has a 60 grade for power, 40 grade for speed. So you're getting above average power and you're going to get some speed with that. Like you mentioned, good plate discipline, high walk rate, like to see that good eye. So the maturation there might not have too many issues early on. It's going to be very interesting to read your Fab article this weekend to see, you know, the range and outcomes for his bids. So, yeah, a little bit of power and speed. We all like that. So he's certainly going to get some attention.
And, you know, I'm doing send up my cutline bids, and I don't know what it is. And I know Trevor Larnach is a former first round pick. He's a lefty. He's got a nice power bat. He's basically been hitting anywhere between leadoff to second and third in this Twins lineup. Of course, he probably wouldn't be if everybody was healthy and Polanco and Kirilloff and everybody was there, but that's what he's been doing. But I've kind of tempered my cutline bids a little bit on him. I just don't know. I don't know how much staying power he'll have in the lineup when everyone is healthy. I assume at some point he might just go back to platooning against just righties. I don't know if he's going to, I don't think he's necessarily going to get sent down to the minors. There's no reason for him to get sent down. He's, you know, 26 years old. And, you know, like I said, former first round pick. He's a solid bat, but I'm not like over the moon about him. There are a lot of guys that I think will be popular in these cutline bids available in that format. Guys like Larnach, guys like Chaz McCormick, guys like Bryce Elder, even though he's a pitcher. I'm just bringing up guys that are kind of the it guys now. I guess Chris Bubich could be part of that conversation. Guys that are kind of it now, but you're thinking about the long haul, right? For the long term of the season, like, obviously, at some point, Jose Altuve comes back. Chaz McCormick isn't going to be the leadoff man. He's probably going to go back to hitting, you know, bottom third of the lineup, maybe getting platoon here and there. But how are you doing that with your cutline bids as far as, you know, looking towards the long-term future as opposed to what some of these guys can do for you now and how you're prioritizing?
Yeah, so playing time, current health, team context, where they hit in the order of their lineup, you know, all those things kind of add up. And so James Outman, I would actually prefer him more than somebody like Anthony Volpe. I think that what we've seen from Outman versus Anthony Volpe, Outman is available in 51% of cut lines. So more than Volpe, I think he's only available in 16% of them. I think that the sustainability, I think that that's a key, right, for the young people in general, young players, is the sustainability factor. And so Outman, for me, is somebody that I'm pretty interested in adding. And I'm rather aggressive when it comes to cut line bidding in the first Fab period, because you're going to end up out of these 10 teams in your league. So many players are going to pretty much just negate the team after a while if it isn't contending for not even the league. We don't really care about the league prize because it's only double the entry fee. It's really about getting into the overall and then continuing on with the cut line after that. And once teams kind of feel like they've gone, you know, just out of the money, so to speak, the attention is taken away from their teams. And so you're going to see a lot less competition, a lot less aggressiveness, or the player pool and how many players you have per bid, et cetera, is going to be much less. And you're going to be able to finagle little dollars here and there, even if it's that, even if you honestly go in with less than $100 for your second Fab period, I think you're still going to be able to optimize what you come out with just because of how lackadaisical the entire league is in this format. So I'm extremely aggressive this first period. And somebody like James Outman does have the sustainability. So yeah, I look at all those things. But to answer the question again, it's how much playing time are they getting? Multi-position eligibility, also that's a little bump in this format. Yes. To spread things out. And then, you know, team context, health, youth, ceiling, right? All these little things add up. But it's you can't hold on to too many guys that are hurt. That's the big thing here is I know we like to say fantasy baseball and baseball in general it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. But you can't treat this cut line necessarily like a marathon. I think you kind of got to keep going, put the pedal to the metal.
Yep, indeed. And I'm actually, and I apologize, double dutying here because we are recording an hour before the cut line deadline. And of course, the Monday and Tuesday games count towards the overall scoring. So, you know, a little advantage here with, like, for example, guy I already love in Josh Lowe, having to move him up a little bit after his nice game today and little things like that. But I am also rather big, I think you already know that, on James Outman. So I'm going to be spending a pretty penny on him. What's funny is we had a guy in the Discord, Michael Dodson, and he just joked around. I don't think he joked. He said, hey, I think I'm going to go like 444 on Outman. And I'm thinking, dude, we're in some same leagues together. And I want to go big too. And so I joked, I'm like, oh great. Now I'm going to see, you know, I'm going to go 445. So now it's like this, you know, contest. Now it's kind of like an open, right? Like
mine's 475. I can show you. It's Outman's 475.
All right. Nice.
So, I mean, you're going to see bids like that. It's going to vary per league too, right? I mean, that's another thing with these things, like we see in OCs versus like an online or a main event that's 15 teams. These are only 10 teams. Some people are going to forget about tonight too. It's a random Tuesday. It's not your normal Sunday. Some alarms might not be set. Some people might not read the NFBC email or not go on Twitter, et cetera. Like, everything is just, it's so much wider in the range of outcomes. So you might see some Outman bids. You might win them for $48 tonight, right? You never know. But yeah, I think being aggressive in the cut line is something I'm very, very, very adamant on.
Yeah, I ended up at 506, just going a little bit over 500, see if somebody goes 505. I'd love to win like a massive bid by like a dollar. That would be amazing.
Sure.
Is Graham Ashcraft, by the way, I'm sure a lot of people are like cut line, I don't care about this, but Graham Ashcraft, your top pitcher of like the main guys that are available, or do you have somebody else you like more, like a Descafani or?
I'm looking at Ashcraft, then Bubich, Descafani, Yusei Kikuchi, Dean Kramer. Those are the top five for me.
Okay. You got Johnny Brito in the mix. David Peterson on some teams is available. Your boy Chris Flexen, I think he's pitching as we speak.
He's in there.
Yeah, he's in the mix. So yeah,
he's giving it. It's oh god, he just gave it. I sat him everywhere. I kind of wanted to see how it went. As we were speaking, he has now given up 12 hits.
Oh my goodness! I just saw the score. Nine runs. Holy shit!
Nelson Velasquez hit a grand slam. Hopefully Ian Happ got in on this. He didn't. Rubbish. He did ground rule double. He's hit twice in this inning, so he's up and got a ground rule double. So there we go.
Well, but Bob Kramatola, if I'm not mistaken, I think said something about, is it happening tonight with capital HAPP? So I'm guessing he probably put a big boy on Ian Happ to go yard. So still some game left to go here. We'll see how that goes. So a little bit of injury and news, things like that. So first of all, and I know it's a difficult, it's kind of difficult to navigate in this area on Twitter. Like, nobody wants to be the injury I told you so guy. And so I think, you know, we have been better at that, right? I know in past years, you know, me and you have been a little bit more, a little bit looser with it. And so, you know, we kind of know when to hold back. And it is hard sometimes when you kind of really feel something and you end up being right about it. It is really hard not to just kind of, you know, personalities are all different, but like for me and you, it's kind of hard to not like, you know, shout from the rooftops. But yeah, so far, two of your faves that you had pointed out in your Juice versus Squeeze article and on this podcast, those two guys got hurt today. One of them is Tim Anderson. I do have him on a main event. He was a target of mine. I kind of knew the risk I was taking on because this is a guy that, you know, over the last few years just always has some sort of issues, you know, whether even like just suspension or just being crazy or just getting hurt, lower body injuries, a lot of them. And then Brandon Woodruff, unfortunately, it's a shoulder thing. It's more of a precautionary thing, so we hope he's okay. I'm kind of not too worried about those two guys, but those are two guys that you had pointed out that you were not a fan of going into the season.
Yeah, Daniel Bard was also on that list. So 30% is currently on the IL. That's unfortunate because Tim Anderson was awesome. I hope Daniel Bard comes back. And now I'm rooting for him, actually, because he was dealing with anxiety. And I deal with that as well at times. So, I'm actually turning corner and hoping Daniel Bard can come back, right the ship, and prove me wrong there. And then with Tim Anderson, it's unfortunate because we're going to call it a a bad baseball play, a freakish injury. But in it's not necessarily why I was fading him, but I did highlight, you know, the last four seasons, he has had a lot of lower injury or lower body injuries. The sprained right ankle, 34 days, the strained right groin, 11 days, strained left hamstring twice, cost him 25 days. Then the strained right groin again last season was 82 days, along with the torn tendon in the left middle finger. So we have seen injuries pile up for him. He is now, 30 years old. He's not as young, et cetera, but the talent, the skills, where he was hitting, how the offense was going, everything was going great. So hopefully he can bounce back. The timetable return for him is 2 to 4 weeks. Hopefully we can see him by the end of May or early June. And then who was Brandon Woodruff? Yeah, so long, partner. My actually concern was kind of just with the fingertips and all that stuff, getting feeling from the Raynaud syndrome. We did see some injuries before with Woodruff, albeit it wasn't ever the shoulder. So anytime we do get the shoulder thing though, man, like it's sirens are going to be going off for me moving forward now for even next year. Because I always obviously reevaluate a player year to year, but Woodruff now, so this will be the fourth time he has spent on the IL, which I think I even mentioned when we talked about our starting pitchers, that's not nothing. Strained right hamstring, 41 days. Strained left oblique, 58 days. Sprained right ankle, 32 days. And now we have a precautionary, is what the Brewers are calling it, for the shoulder for Brandon Woodruff. So now he's on the IL again. Very unfortunate because he has looked really, really, really good this year. So hopefully Woody can bounce back. But
brutal news just now, as we speak, got an alert for Corey Seager removed from the game with a hamstring.
No.
Yeah, that would sting.
That does sting. Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, so we'll see what transpires there. And then since we were on the topic, Daniel Bard, I did want to put you on the spot because it has some influence with our Pierce Johnson bids the last couple weeks and also with cutline bids, right? So Daniel Bard is now facing live hitters. If you had to put money on it, if you had to predict, kind of just taking away all kind of personal feelings from it, what do you think happens with Colorado and the closing job? Do you think Daniel Bard comes back and takes it, or do you think Pierce Johnson runs with it?
I think they're going to give Bard the opportunity to come back and take his job, especially because they're paying him to do so, right? The contract kind of states that he's the guy to get the job done. So, and I think he's earned that, especially from what he did last year. So I would assume that he would get the first stab at what he was previously doing. And that's total with the Corey Seager thing. That's just total fucking juju right there, because mentioning all these injuries about Anderson and Woodruff and blah, 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 which I wasn't even no victory laps or anything like that whatsoever, to be honest with you, but that's just total, like, you're talking fucking injuries and, oh, here you go. Well, here's one of your guys smack you back in the head.
I kind of learned myself a little lesson here. And I think I sometimes provocative on Twitter or have some fun, whatever, but this was really innocent. Like, I posted and people would make a big deal about it, but I did get at least 10 plus replies, but it was basically, I wrote, if Acuna spends any time on IL, Kyle Tucker may end up as the fantasy 101. And I now see, innocent me, how that kind of comes across. And this is obviously, I have a lot of Acuna. I do not want him to spend a single minute on the IL. I want him to be healthy all season. I don't want any player to be hurt, of course. But yeah, there was no intention there. That's just like, it's more, I mean, it's basically, this is a Kyle Tucker tweet.
That was my hot take of the season. Kyle Tucker, number one hitter overall in fantasy. Yeah.
You said it.
He's a monster. He's you know what I'm starting to really like about Kyle Tucker actually is he's becoming spicier on the field. I think as he's becoming this more of a veteran and leader, and now we're seeing Correa's left and Altuve's on the IL. Kyle Tucker's he's the fucking man, and it pains me to say that
for arguing with an ump on the base path.
I love it. Yeah, because they called him, I believe, inside the path or whatever it was, but the play was a weird play and he didn't really have any other choice, but whatever. He's becoming one of, if not the leader on the team right now, and he's got a little flair to him, and he is so fucking good. If he didn't play for the Astros, I would already have his jersey in my closet. And I know he wasn't on the 2017 team, but it's just, won't ever have one. And I like my jerseys.
Yeah. I need more jerseys, by the way. I have no, I got nothing bad to say about Kyle Tucker. He's an absolute beast. The only thing is, in 2020, the COVID year, when I was doing a show, and was, you know, trying to get some fancier folks on, like professional athletes, I got a warm intro to him and he never responded to me. So, you know, but I understand who wants to, what kind of pro player wants to talk, fantasy baseball.
That's right. That's right.
We've got another one here. Zach Eflin, IL, hitting the IL with back tightness, coming off a start this weekend. And the great Taj Bradley called up, their top prospect, top pitching prospect. Another guy that, the prospect heads are a big fan of. Sounds like he'll be at least in this start coming up. I think it's Wednesday, Thursday. Will be like 70, 75 pitches. How do we see things going with him, right? Because this could be a difficult one. I mean, Eflin will be back eventually. Fleming really isn't an answer as a fifth starter. But could this be like, you know, Bradley locked in? Or do you think more likely that he just kind of comes in one and done or a couple of starts and then goes back to AAA, where he basically only has, you know, about 65 career innings at?
Yeah, I think this is not long lived. And honestly, like sometimes you could say, well, results oriented, if he comes up, looks good, they really, really need him, that kind of thing. This year, they're trying to contend. I think people sort of said that about Hunter Brown and Grayson Rodriguez, those kind of dudes where the team's in contention. How many pitchers are behind those guys that can fulfill that sort of need? And with Taj Bradley, that's kind of, I don't know the severity of Zach Eflin's back tightness yet, but with something like that, hopefully it is super minor. They're not going to risk anything like that because they can just pluck these guys from the tree, right? They can just grab sort of like the Dodgers. And so it's the next man up. And regardless of results, I think that he'll potentially get sent back down. So I would temper expectations as of now, but I could be wrong. He does have the stuff to get it done. But I don't think that he will pitch his next outing and then continue to stay in the rotation for the remainder of the season.
Yeah. So prior to last season, like from basically rookie ball to double A, he was, you know, lights out, 30% K dude, low-ish walk rate, you know, sort of minor league average, 7-8%. And then in AAA last season, he made 12 starts. They were decent, about a 3.5 ERA, just about 8 Ks per 9, 21.5% strikeout rate, and a 6% walk rate. So far, 2 starts in the minors, AAA this year, just 7 innings combined in those two. Got worked, I think, in one of those starts, and 10% walk rate, just, you know, not many innings there to go on. But yeah, should be interesting. He will be somebody that people are going to watch. And then, of course, I mean, we think back to the opportunity that Luis Patino had, right? I mean, he's somebody that has been acclaimed in this organization, coming up as a prospect, and just either gets injured or gets blown up, and just, you know, he had a really rough spring, and so he obviously didn't make the team. But I think this is a little bit different level of talent here. I think Taj Bradley is fantastic, has a nice bright career ahead of him. He's only 22 years old, but I think anything can happen. Nevertheless, I think Edouard Julien is going to be the more popular of the two come Sunday, Fab.
Absolutely. But with him too, we might also need to somewhat temper expectations because Jorge Polanco is also rehabbing.
Yeah.
Right. So we do have some interesting guys that are coming up, which is always exciting, but which is sometimes to my fault. I always like, again, using the term tempering expectations, but that's just kind of how I go about my business with these youngsters.
And let me get it right. I'm sorry, especially to my French Canadian folks that listen to this one, Julien. So I will make sure to say it correctly from this point, but
that was nice.
Yeah, I mean, there's there could be a path to playing time there, right? I mean, right now, Nick Gordon's playing second base. I guess Jorge Polanco gets there when he's healthy and everything's okay with him. So
on the flip side, I don't want to sound like a dumb boomer because he is absolutely legit and he could he could help. He could win you your league, right? That's like how you got to say it. He does have that capability. So, you know, do your own research, and kind of see the depth on the team. Kind of what would he need to do to stay up? Is it possible if that's going to keep him up? If so, then maybe you up those bids. So, need to dive into a little bit more.
What's this logic you're telling me? I thought that all that matters is whether he hits a home run on Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah, man. And that always seems to happen too. It's just got to pump those numbers up, like Matthew McConaughey says to Leonardo DiCaprio.
A couple more hitters or pitchers actually to discuss. Carlos Rodon had a little bit of back tightness. Doesn't seem to be an issue because he is going to have a bullpen session on Wednesday. And so the word was that he would return to the rotation approximately a month after he began those sessions. And it looks like, I guess that would put him somewhere around, you know, May 10th, May 11th. So either way, the Yankees, if everything is on track, no setbacks, that would be around like May 10th. He's at home against the A's. And on the 11th, they start a series with the Tampa Bay Rays. So that'll be interesting. Keep an eye on there. Ranger Suarez. This is interesting to me, the Phillies rotation in general. He's facing live hitters, could be back before the end of the month. He is a part of the rotation, although he obviously struggled a little bit last season. Everyone remembers his 2021 swoon over the last couple months of that year. But I'm curious, like, what you think of Matt Strom, because this is a guy that I have loved before when I thought he was going to crack the San Diego Padres rotation. Did not work out. He kind of moved to middle relief. And I don't know, man. There's just something about Strom where, I mean, and I'm very, like, not in the Taiwan Walker camp. Like, I just don't think he's a good fantasy starter. I've just kind of not been targeting him. I think there's a chance Strom could be better than Bailey Falter and Taiwan Walker. It might be a little bit of wish casting, but, like, when Ranger Suarez returns, it's going to be a little bit of a pickle. Common sense says that Matt Strom will probably just go back to his multi-inning relief role. But, like, he had that gem on Monday, and then what if he goes into Great American this weekend and throws another gem? By the time Suarez is back, he's already on a roll and just is a worthwhile fantasy ad.
Yeah, so the Phillies like their stuff, and Strom has way more than that than Ranger Suarez. Ranger Suarez had a 10.7K minus walk rate last year, so that's your strikeout minus walk ratio. And Strom is currently at 21.6% on the season, albeit this is all still very early. So some numbers could be very high, some numbers could be very low. You know, water is going to find its level with baseball. But yeah, I think that he could just certainly outpitch Ranger Suarez as it is, because I'm not high on Ranger Suarez, with or without the injury. So the Phillies are still in contention. They were two wins away from winning the World Series last year. They are going to do, you know, the right thing, I would think, and what it takes to succeed. And if it is weighing one or the other between Strom and Ranger Suarez, I think it would be Strom. And then there's also, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I think between those four, there are only two spots available between Falter, Taiwan Walker, Ranger Suarez, and Matt Strom, as long as no one else gets injured in this rotation. But, I mean, let's also not forget Ranger Suarez was a reliever originally, converted into a starting pitcher, and a damn good reliever, too.
That's where he needs to go.
Maybe that's the spot.
Taiwan Walker has a 4.9 strikeout minus walk rate. The other thing, too, is these pitchers like this are going to be getting exposed to all the atmospheres. We can hypothesize the ball's juice, right? But the other thing is this time last year when I first moved to Chicago, I'm about to have my one-year anniversary, we were going to Cubs games, and my daughter was in a Patagonia bunting suit, dressed like she was in this going to the snow. I'm in shorts and a shirt right now. It was in the low 70s today. The sun is shining. The wind is blowing. All these things are just lining up, right? And then you got the pitch clock. With the pitch clock, and you can't throw over, so we're seeing stolen bases go up. We're seeing runs go up. The pitch clock's also causing these meltdowns. You can't step off. You can't slow things down. We see pitchers constantly try and take their time when they're not locating their pitches. They're struggling with command or control, and now everything's speeding up to them, and it's not good. So Yeah, I hope to have none of these guys, Taiwan Walker, Ranger Suarez, and hopefully the Phillies, you know, make the right decisions for their organization. I don't want a new court. What? Nobody's
Let me interrupt, dude. Oh my God. Lord Mountcastle has 9 Please. RBI.
Yes, I love that. I have him in.
My Lord.
I have him a lot. And my dog's barking. That's Scully barking. Yes, he's very excited. 9 RBI. That is something.
I don't remember last time somebody had 9 RBI, to be honest.
I'm trying to go to the box score to see. So, okay, he obviously had to hit a second or third home run. I know he already had one.
Yeah, he hit a second.
Wow.
Anyways, well, we'll talk about him later. The Braves rotation, you've got Max Fried on IL. You've got Kyle Wright, who just returned. Hopefully he doesn't have to go back. The rookie experiment didn't work out. Jared Schuster and Dylan Dodd, both of those guys were sent down after a little bit of a rocky start. Dodd's first start did go well. Mike Soroka is looking really good in the minor, still kind of working his way up, I believe, 4 innings in his last minor league start. But Soroka, when he's healthy, is going to be a locked-in member of this rotation. He's a really good pitcher, not major strikeout stuff, but usually a solid ratios guy. We'll get lots of good run support, a big ground ball guy, if I recall. So my question is, how do you think things shake out for Bryce the Elder? Do you think this is an opportunity for him to stick in the rotation all season? Is there a spot for him? And again, this is a guy who, you know, just pointing it out, wasn't all that great in the minor leagues last year and then pitched above his expected numbers last season when he did pitch for the Braves. And that's kind of been the case, too. It's been kind of walking through raindrops. I mean, occasionally, eventually the other shoe drops on these type of things. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I kind of like him. I think he could work out at least better. Schuster and Dodd are probably higher, bigger prospects, maybe more talented in the long term. But I don't know. I could see Bryce Elder sticking around this season.
I missed the boat on him, but I concur with you there. He's shown an improvement in strikeout rate. Big spike there, actually. So 28.3% there. So he's getting close to a 20% strikeout minus walk rate, albeit small sample size. He's not getting a lot of O swing rate, which isn't great. And he is allowing a lot of in the zone contact. So his Z contact rate is really high. It's all too early to kind of say where, you know, if things kind of trend with some of these numbers, then he's probably going to regress back in a bad way, just a little bit. But he pitches on the Braves. He can go deep enough, right? So he's averaged over 6 innings pitched, or we'll just call it 6. It's 12.1 innings over 2 starts. So 6 innings pitched, we'd love that. If you can go 6 innings and you're pitching on a team that scores runs and you have a strikeout rate north of a quarter, so 25% or more, fucking sign me up. So sure. That's keep things simple sometimes, right? I'm all for, like, shout out to Phil Dussault, dude. He told me right after we get home from Vegas, I think Aaron Nola's broken. Like, quote unquote, in a text, I get a quote, Aaron Nola's broken. Like a total badass. Just like, he's broken. And it's like, what? And he's like, yeah, just my system, everything I'm scraping and putting together is just, he's broke. And I keep watching Aaron Nola and I'm like, oh gosh, this is not gonna go well. And it's just not. But sometimes on the flip side, you get a guy in Fab, he's going 6 innings, pitches on a great team, and he's striking out guys at 28%. Let's go. Mm-hmm.
KISS, keep it simple. A couple more hitters here. Seth Brown for the Oakland A's. Man, it really doesn't matter, but obviously sucks for him. We want him to be healthy, but he's got an oblique strain. He'll a grade 2-1. So he'll be out 4 to 6 weeks. I think he's a pretty easy drop in all formats. Mm-hmm. And then on the good side, well, if you consider this good for one of these guys, because a lot of people don't like him, but Josh Donaldson and Harrison Bader are both expected back soon for the Yankees. Bader is about a week away from a rehab assignment, could be back, I don't know, anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks. Donaldson maybe back in a week and a half or so. Franchi Cordero hit another bomb. He's looking really good in this lineup. It's really funny how the Yankees sometimes just get these, you know, these over the hill, down for the count rejects and reinvigorate him. And that's what it's looking like for Franchi Cordero. So, he was a surprisingly popular ad in main events, kind of sneaky. Like, I thought in some cases that, you know, people might be able to sneak him by for cheap. Now he went for like $30+ in some leagues. Maybe it's, you know, you could kind of get the Yankees tax on it. But from what I've been seeing from Franchi Cordero, it's been very, very nice.
Yeah, another bomb tonight. And I think he only went, he went for like $2 or $3 in my main events. Yeah, I didn't get him. He was in my contingencies. But if things click for him, tiny bit of speed with that power, huge strikeout rate, a lot of swing and miss, bad plate discipline. But he's on the Yankees. It's sometimes you just put on those pinstripes and special fucking things happen, man. The baseball gods can sometimes shine down on good people like that. And we saw it last year with Matt Carpenter, right? Like just this rejuvenation, you know, it wasn't the salsa. It was the pinstripes and just the ballpark, right? The right field porch, et cetera. And that would play really well for Franchi. But there will be a platoon. So again, temper expectations. I don't think he becomes a 6 out of 7 days, you know, 5 out of 6 days a week guy. But he is on the right side of that handedness. So he is going to face a lot of right-handers more than lefties. And hopefully it continues. I'm rooting for him as a baseball fan. I didn't get any though. So if it continues, maybe he becomes interesting in your 12 teams then maybe, right? That would be the next step if things prosper.
One more guy I wanted to mention here is MJ Melendez. I mean, it's not hurt or anything, but just pointing out that he's been hitting the crap out of the ball. So the results aren't great. I think he's hitting like .150, but he is, he's third. If you're just looking at StatCast metrics, he's third in average exit velocity. Granted, it's early in the season, but it's 97.5 miles per hour. And you know, all those numbers have come down. At the end of the year, I think it'll only be Judge, maybe Stanton, maybe one other guy who are even over 94 on the season. So it'll balance out. But yeah, he's third in the league right now behind Matt Chapman and JD Martinez in average exit velocity. Second in barrel rate, 33% behind Matt Chapman again. And then fifth in hard hit rate, 67%. Only Matt Chapman, LeMahieu, Aaron Judge, and JD Martinez are above him. And then just a big discrepancy between his expected metrics and his actuals, his WOBA, for example, 441 expected, 260 actual. So I think you're a Melendez guy, if I'm not mistaken, no?
Absolutely. Have him in a main event. And I have him in one or two, four honeys, etc. So yeah, definitely exposed to MJ Melendez. There are some warts that we are seeing right now, though, and I think that we should also highlight those for him. He is young. We did see some concerns last year, you know, when you look at strikeout rate. So 24.5% last year isn't great. Right now it's up to 39.5%, which I do not like to see. And then when you look at his swinging strike rate, that's at 16.1%. And then his contact rate is at 59.7%. So those are three really bad metrics. On the good side of things is the O swing. He's not chasing outside of the zone above average or anything like that. So he's still staying skilled with that. So hopefully the eye gets just a little bit better and all of that goodness you were talking about with the barrel rates and the hard contact. If we see, I don't think that he's going to stick to that strikeout rate that I'm seeing. And if that eye does hold up and we do have a little bit of a maturation process, the swinging strike rate also goes down. He doesn't have a high O swing. So yeah, everything that you're saying with just a little bit, you get a little bit better with the plate discipline and stuff, or, you know, that we're seeing early on and liftoff, baby, let's go.
All right. So we're going to end, well, not end, but we're going to finish up here a little bit. Talk just a touch on bullpens, how they've been looking early on and a look ahead to some weekend schedules. But real quick, our folks here at Prediction Strike have a message for you. And we do ask if you wished you could have a stock in a guy like Aaron Judge or Paul Goldschmidt. Well, Prediction Strike makes that a real possibility. It's the only sports performance-based sports stock market where you can buy and sell shares. Professional athletes as if they were stocks. It lets fans create portfolios of their favorite athletes, pick up James Outman before a game and, drop them. I mean, just do anything really with any of the players. Just basically treat it like your marketplace. PredictionStrike.com, or you can download their app from the App Store. You can use code FTN, buy, sell, and hold shares of your favorite players like you would real stock. Again, that's PredictionStrike.com, promo code FTN. And you can receive a free share of an athlete with your first deposit of $20 or more. Again, promo code FTN.
Buy those shares of Jacob DeGrom, because if we continue seeing what he's doing, healthy. He's winning the Cy Young, baby. Oh. I know. I will probably wake up tomorrow and he'll be hurt, because we already saw that with Seager after we were talking about injuries. I woke up and had a bad dream that he didn't make this start tonight, his third start of the season, due to a bad wrist. I actually had that like happen. Yeah, I know you get weird dreams too. And so I had that and I was like, scouring in early in the morning, Jacob DeGrom news, and I'm like, no, there's no wrist news. Okay, we're good, we're still good right now.
It's weird, man. The only dreams I even have or remember are either very vivid baseball things happening or about getting my son into elementary school, because apparently in California it's like, you know, like it's not that easy. It's kind of it's a big nightmare. Deal. So just those two things always at the top of my head. So real quick about bullpens, just kind of want to throw some things out there, because obviously it's very early. Things will change. But obviously the Yankees, Guardians, they both have excellent bullpens so far going on this season. They're collectively leaders in strikeout percentage. And this is the Yankees even without Lou Trevino and Tommy Conley, even Jonathan Loaisiga has been out recently. So those two are bullpens have been fantastic. The Brewers, they've had the best bullpen so far. Basically, a bunch of no-names behind Devin Williams and Matt Bush. So, of their eight relievers, six of them have yet to allow an earned run. Most of these guys have had at least three or four innings pitched. And only three runs allowed total in 35 innings. So, not a lot of firepower of this bunch. But if you look at them, kind of some interesting names. I think the Brewers usually always have good pens, bullpens. They know what they're doing. So, that's interesting. That's on the good side. On the bad side, I wouldn't call this bad yet. The Pittsburgh Pirates, they have a top five bullpen right now. Collectively, they have the most saves in the league, tied with the Blue Jays. As you know, David Bednar has four of those. I think Underwood and Crow got the others. But they have the seventh lowest hard hit rate allowed, ERA under three, but a little bit of fool's gold. You kind of look at these guys, like it's like I haven't really even heard of these guys outside of Crow and Underwood. It's like Robert Zastrini, Dory Moretta, Colin Holderman. Anyways, things might get a little tough for them. They get the Astros the rest of the series, the Cardinals, and then they go to Coors Field. So might be some rough sledding for them.
Got to feel good if you have David Bednar, though, right? He's getting all the usage we want. I think each year he's slipping where he's – we have to consider it a slip at this point. And it's simply because – he pitches on the Pirates, right? So we downgrade team context, and then we like to hypothesize that he's going to get traded. And we thought about that last season, and he didn't get traded last season. And there's also potential that he doesn't get traded this season. There's also a potential that he gets traded to the fucking Mets and becomes the closer or another team like that. So there's just so many what if this, what if that, what if that. And it's also a flaw in myself sometimes, I think. I have a little bit of Clay Holmes, not enough Clay Holmes when you talked about the Yankees bullpen. Similar thing there is I think we got one little brief report out of Boone stating, the manager for the Yankees, stating that Clay Holmes might get used outside of the ninth. Every fucking reliever gets used outside of the ninth at this day and age. Like, it just happens. And I took too much of that. I did too much Salt Bay with it. And, you know, started taking Camilo Duvall over him. That could still be fine and work out, but taking too much information early on, you know, reading in too much of these kind of things, you kind of just you got to take the best reliever on the team. And that was Bednar, that was Holmes for both of those bullpens, and both of them are certainly paying off. Both of them look awesome, and if you got them, you got to feel good about where you're at.
Blurb on season kind of really kind of changed things for him. He did fall a little bit, but then going back to main event season, it was back to, hey, we're all in on Clay Holmes. So he's looked good so far. The final note on bullpens, the Oakland A's, man, they're atrocious. Literally the worst bullpen in baseball. And as we record, they were responsible for that Mountcastle drubbing and you know, Baltimore drubbing. So they had already, I think they already had the worst, given up the most runs among bullpens. So in two and a half innings, Trevor May, Sam Moll, I think it's Sam, yeah, and Danny Jimenez combined to allow six runs and a couple of walks there. Danny Jimenez, another 3 earned runs. So it's really bad there for Oakland.
Luis Robert just hit his 5th home run of the year, and I bought his jersey last week. God, that feels good. That's nice. I haven't gone to the White Sox game yet, but they are coming up soon. They're fun to watch. Hopefully they can get healthy soon.
Yeah. We're rooting for Luis Robert. I didn't place any future bets, as can't really do it in California, and just, with everything, just didn't have enough time. But that would have been my, at least I put it on Twitter. Oh, maybe I'll get a Twitter victory out of it. Is Luis Robert Jr. for AL MVP. But man, you got to get there. You got to have some players around you. And if everybody's getting hurt, it's going to be a little tougher to do that. But if they can pull off the division and he has his massive season, I guess anything is possible.
I have my Spencer Strider ticket for Cy Young.
I like that. I mean, it's a good ticket. Yeah. Looking ahead to some good schedules coming up this week. Obviously, I think everybody is familiar with the Boston Red Sox having the very unique setup of 6 lefties that they would be facing over 7 games this week. And so over the weekend, they're going to get some tough ones. It's going to be against the Angels. They're going to face Patrick Sandoval, Tyler Anderson, and Reed Detmers. And so those of us that have been stacking those Red Sox righties, like, for example, hoping for the Justin Turner, who's always crushed lefties over the course of his career, he hasn't really gotten going. Enrique Hernandez usually hits lefties well. He's been leading off. I think he's been a goose egg so far, but we'll see if they get going a little bit this weekend. Bobby Dalbec looks ready to play, man. He jumped in, I think got a hit and then stole a base. He was playing first base on Tuesday night. So he might be splitting some time with Tristan Casas, right? I wouldn't be surprised to see him play against lefties and maybe stick around. So maybe this is a new version of Bobby Dalbec we see.
Yeah, if so, shout out to the fantasy managers that drafted him in DCs or took an early shot on him this week in Fab. If not, you can get another shot this week. Because he's still available in some leagues. And there was something else I wanted to mention. I can't remember what it was.
Detmers related?
No, I don't remember what it was. I'm having one of those, moments.
Well, if you think of it along the way, let's wrap it up with these last 3 series. We got the Phillies, who I think busted out for 13 runs on Monday night. They looked great. And then Kyle Schwarber, a bomb off Jesus Luzardo, who's currently my favorite pitcher in baseball. They just left him in just a little bit too long on Tuesday. But the Phillies are going to get a nice little series in Cincinnati. Connor Overton, the walking ball machine. And then you got Graham Ashcraft, obviously a nice matchup there. And then Luis Sessa, just your kind of run-of-the-mill guy. So those 3 guys in will be pitching in Great American against the Phillies. So it will be interesting. I love to see Bryson Stott, who I've been investing in draft season, getting some work against leadoff hitters leading off against right-handed pitchers. Hasn't been hitting the ball very hard, but he's hitting over 400. He's stolen a couple of bases, 450 OBP. He looks really good. So I like the fact that the Phillies are giving him a shot opportunity. Maybe things get going for them this weekend.
I said it a couple times in the offseason, the Phillies, if I know that now we're without Rhys Hoskins, we've seen injuries starting to pile up there, but it was Baum, it was Stott, right? If we can see them prosper, maybe a little bit from Marsh, that lineup can still ascend. And we are seeing that. We are seeing that from Baum and Stott. I think both of them look really good. And if you have either of them or both of them, I think that they're going to certainly give you a profitable payout on where you drafted them.
My God, the hits keep coming. Dansby Swanson.
Dude, he's on fire.
No, he left the game.
Oh,
sorry, man.
See, fuck.
This is bad. All right.
See, that's why we shouldn't have mentioned those guys that were hurt.
We need to get off the air soon here. Cleveland Guardians, they're going to go in and have a fun one against the Washington Nationals. And the Guardians have a very, again, second year in a row, like a really kind of sneaky offense, right? Like not the sexiest bunch of guys outside of Jose Ramirez, but they always seem to get it done. Stephen Kwan just looks like the prototypical stud leadoff hitter, gets on base, steals bases, just really great. One of the best contact hitters in the league, Ahmed Rosario. These guys just run. So a really nice team here. They're going to get Trevor Williams, Chad Kuhl, and the corpse of Patrick Corbin. So a nice little weekend there. Miles Straw's been heating up. Might be a good week for Josh Naylor. Mike Zunino might hit a couple bombs. We've been seeing Will Brennan playing a lot. So Go Guardians this weekend against the Nats.
Yeah, they do not strike out a lot. They make a lot of contact. Their starters get a shit ton of volume. I like their offense.
Mets and A's, final series here, we'll mention, and obviously rather lopsided. And you've got Cody Senga, Carlos Carrasco, and Max Scherzer for the Mets. And then you got Fujinami, J-Cap, James Caprellian, and J.P. Sears will be in, two of those former Yankees, actually, going for the A's. I had a little bit of a tough call this weekend. So obviously Carrasco, the velocity's down, can't get the pitch clock thing going on. And in some cases, like in 12-teamers, you could have justified maybe a drop because there are always comparable pitchers that you can pick up. And if your roster's tight, you could do something like that. But I'm giving him one last shot. I made a decision on two of my 12-teamers where I played Carrasco over Tyler McGill. And not Trevor, but Tyler. But he's at home facing the Padres. And, you know, I mean, there's so much going into these decisions, right? Because, you know, you don't want to be off on trying to time someone, right? Like if you recall my issue with Michael Wacha, played him week one, he got blasted, then benched him for his like 10 strikeout game. And then if you keep playing just based on who the opponent is and aren't really digging deep or aren't feeling like the vibe or the flow, then you can like mistime a pitcher all the time. But for me, this is going to be kind of my Carrasco last stand. So we'll see, man. It'll be tough, but I'm rolling him out there. Like if you can't get it done against the A's, man, then you're just no good to me.
Yeah. So his fastball this year is at 91.2 miles per hour. Last year it was at 93.2. So two ticks down there. You're sort of seeing it across the board. Changeups down a mile, sliders down a mile per hour. So it's, you know, health. We've seen health issues with him in the past. We are seeing age start to creep up, you know, as time goes on. So always been a fan of Cookie. Might be getting,
not everything lasts forever.
Might be getting dried out and crumbled, but I don't know why it made me think of Chevy Chase in Vegas Vacation when he bring, at the beginning of the movie, when he's like, my patent passed. And he's like, they're eating this like really old milk and everyone's like drinking this milk and they're like, oh yeah, it's good. Like making this really bad face, but anyways, yeah, the cookie might crumble. Bum. Let's get out of here.
Yes, yes. At some point, we should do like an '80s. Like, I mean, those are just like '80s, '90s. I understand that's like when we grew up, but I think a lot of people that are listening here, they grew up in that era as well, and just you know the difference of the music and the movies and the comedies, and just like, man, it was just such an amazing, great era, but. Just a random thought here at the end. And we've got a few minutes here before the cut line deadline hits. So we're going to get to it, knock some of those out. Any last second thoughts here?
No, I'm just so thankful to all the positive, you know, feedback that we get. And thank you so much for listening. This is a great time of season and I hope everybody succeeds, but let's also have a lot of fun.
Yes. If you get a chance, please rate and review the podcast, available everywhere where podcasts can be heard. And if you haven't yet, with all of our fantastic content throughout the season, it can all be had at ftnfantasy.com. And it's 20% off if you use the promo code FTNPOD. Thank you so much for listening today. For Matthew, Maddie Wood Davis, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.